You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. Who can make your son die? Cover him with bees. Hey guys, it's not a really a remake. It's a sequel, as it seems. The Candyman.
Wow. You've been writing that all day.
I came up with it a minute and a half before you guys got here.
This is the worst Willy Wonka reboot ever.
But those are also how the best intros are born, let's be real. I mean, the movie opened that way, to be fair.
It did actually open with that song. And I was like, I'm watching it, and like the credits are all backwards. And I'm like, oh, this would be clever if it's a thing. But as it went on and all the credits are backwards, I'm going, should I message the rep and let them know that like the print is backwards? So I'm like looking at it, I'm like, okay, oh wait, okay, so there's some numbers in there, right? Okay.
It's like, oh, it's rear projection. Yeah. No, that's terrible. That's a dumb joke.
I think you're just projecting.
So this is, in fact, a not, as I said in my little singing intro, not, as we were led to believe, a remake of the Clive Barker film based on his story, The Forbidden, Candyman, from the 90s, which is really underrated film, like the original. I think when I first saw it, even, I was like, yeah, it's okay. It wasn't like other Clive Barker stuff, so it was kind of like, oh, this is not really what I was expecting.
Yeah.
But rewatched it several times since then and go, wow, this is a really smart, kind of ahead of its time in a lot of way film that suffers in one real way. And that's just that even though it's a very woke before its time type film about racial issues, the protagonist is still a white woman.
And a white writer and a white director.
Yes. Jordan Peele's like, we have to grab this property before some other white dude decides to make a fourth movie out of it or a reboot that's terrible with white people in it.
Mm-hmm. I doubt that's what happened. It's Jordan Peele. He walked into an office, said, I hear you have the rights to Candyman. They're like, yeah, we're going to do something with it. No, I'm going to do something. And they said, yes, of course
yes,
you are.
Yeah. Yes, okay.
Who
else would do it?
Well, I mean, they really were developing something. At one point, they were trying to make Candyman versus Leprechaun. Yes. Not even kidding. That was going to be a thing.
God. Thankfully, Tony Todd read the script and said, I'm not doing this
shit. Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, but let's talk about that, because now I'm actually interested to see.
You, of course, want to see
I might want to see
that. Who doesn't want to see a six-foot man with a hook for a hand take on Warwick Davis in a top hat?
Oh, sign me up.
But the novelty's in the log line. That's all it is.
I just want to see Tony Todd go, oh, for God's sake, stop punning. So he's like, all right, this is a black property at this point. We are taking this film from white people and going, this belongs to us, and we're going to do the right thing with it with a black director, Nia DaCosta, and a black protagonist played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. Now, as I said, this is not a reboot or a remake, although it certainly appears at first that perhaps it is, because it's very similar in a lot of ways, the way this all starts off with Chicago's Cabrini Green neighborhood, which is a real, no longer existing, but real, like, ghetto slum in Chicago. Anthony McCoy, who he plays, and his girlfriend, played by Teyonah Parris, who are now living in the more gentrified area right near there, that was like where the old towers used to be, connected to that area. And they're wealthy, but he's an artist, which brings back, if you remember anything from the original film right off the bat, you're like, uh-oh, he's an artist. Right. And he's previously had been doing work that was sort of like about the oppression of black people. We had like a series of paintings with black men in close-ups with nooses around their necks and what have you. But he doesn't have anything new. He doesn't know what that new thing is that he should be doing. But his girlfriend is a curator, like an art show curator. And she's been trying to help him along here. And he ends up, after hearing a ghost story about Candyman, which is right where you go, wait a minute, this is not a remake, because the story they tell is this a different version of the story of the events of the first movie.
Yeah.
Like, even name-checking Virginia Madsen's character from there. You're like, oh. So he goes to check out the remains of Cabrini Green and meets an old guy there, or old, slightly older guy, I should
an
say.
Older guy. Really.
Just a slightly older
guy. Coleman Domingo.
Coleman Domingo, yeah.
Who is great in Zola.
He's
very great in Zola.
I always love seeing him. He's always one of the few things that kept me on Walking Dead as long as I did, because he was just so good on there. He tells him basically the more and more of the story, and he absorbs all of this lore and the kind of meaning behind it, which is white people murdering horribly black people.
Right.
And over time, it happening again and again and again, in some of these cases, in literally the exact same place. And he incorporates it into a new form of art. He doesn't believe in Candyman. You go to the mirror, say Candyman five times, and Candyman appears. Let's try it right now, guys. They've got a reflective TV set.
Oh, God. Does anybody want to do it? I was almost about to do it in the bathroom. I was like, you know what? This is stupid, but I don't know.
Has anybody been doing that promotional tie-in that producers have had with this movie? Apparently, if you like say Candyman five times into your iPhone, into your microphone, I think it is, like that, you get a special final trailer for the movie.
Yeah, it's
really?
It's floating around.
You also get on an NSA watch list.
Also, I'm way too white. I'm pretty sure I would be killed almost immediately.
Yeah, you wouldn't even finish saying it the third time. He's like, Oliver, let's just get this over with, okay?
Here's I'd be like, hook. Shrugged, like, yeah, okay, I get it, yeah.
Which is also interesting, because as a victim of racial violence, this goes back to the original movie, Candyman will kill anybody, considering that, you know, he was an artist who had his hand ripped off because he fell in love with a white girl that he was painting. So a mob basically lynches him, but in a even more horrific than usual way. They beat the shit out of him. They cut off his hand. They replace it with a hook. They cover him with honey, let bees sting him to death. Then they burn him and spread his ashes over what will become Cabrini Green. You would think after that, he's going to be kill Whitey 24/7. But no, Candyman will kill anybody so long as you call him.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, simple rule, don't call him.
Yeah.
Like, really. I mean, like,
and the movie raises that question.
But this also connects to the first movie in the sense that, because he is more than just a mindless killer. He's not Jason Voorhees with one rule.
Right.
He has real connections to certain people. And this movie is about revealing what those connections are and what his connections are to some of the characters in here and why he makes the choices that he does ultimately. Although most of the time when we see him in the film, because, like I said, he does this art exhibit that's all about it. And, like, the challenge, hey, say his name in the mirror five times, which, of course, someone does at some point.
Man.
And, you know, people keep doing it. And, you know, we start seeing the murders happen. Even as Anthony, we start seeing a bee sting he got early on start getting worse and worse and spreading up his arm.
Full Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, he should get some
ointment
for that.
Yeah.
He starts realizing that, like, this is all real. Oh, shit. What do I do? And most of the time we see Candyman in this film, it's actually, and I didn't realize this until I looked at the credits, it was him. He was playing the Candyman as well. He plays him in every shot except for the last shot of the film.
Which is...
What?
Yeah.
Wait, that's him?
That was him, yeah.
So he's playing
God
Sherman.
God damn it, this movie.
So yeah, it's kind of like doing a little bit of a Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 thing you know, but anyway, before I get started, we've been started. I'm Chris. That's right. Hi,
hello,
right.
hello.
It's Frank.
I'm Frank.
And Marco.
I'm Marco.
We kind of like blew Wright's mind a little while ago after the screening, because he didn't know that was Vanessa Williams from the first movie.
Yeah, she has a small appearance in here as Anne Marie McCoy, who is sort of like a secondary character in the original film. I didn't even remember her being in the original film.
Yeah.
So I was like, literally paused the movie and went and looked it up. I was like, oh, that is her. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what blew my mind, is like, because I remember her character, but I didn't remember him.
To be fair, she's aged like 2 weeks since that original movie.
Yeah.
She's aged really well.
Yeah.
She has, yes.
But, you know, there's a lot of linkages to the first movie, and the term that I keep hearing is spiritual successor. And that is as good a description as anything.
For what is talked about and what it portrays, is like, that is the best way to describe it.
Even though they reference the events of the original Candyman, they treat it like the urban legend that it was in the first movie, which is every time somebody tells this story, there's a bit of truth to it, but it changes a little bit. And as we find out, as Chris mentioned earlier, there's more than one Candyman. There's the idea that this kind of generational violence just continuously happens.
Yeah.
So every generation kind of gets its own Candyman, and here we're getting our own.
They get deeper into the idea of the bees thing, where it's like Candyman is not a person. It's like a hive.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots and lots of them, and the first one was Tony Todd. Right. And his entire goal is to basically say Black Lives Matter by killing a bunch of white people. Like his goal in both films is saying, you have to keep my legend alive.
But he kills a lot of black people,
too. They're like, why did you read the thing? What did I tell you? Don't read the thing. Most black people know. They're like, the one thing you don't do is say this. Right. Don't be dumb.
Yeah.
Don't go into the darkened hallway. That's a terrible idea. You just don't do it.
Well, Why do people in movies do that?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, she's like, nope.
And it is the idea that Candyman is angry that he died, and his revenge is to continue living. And the only way he can live is as this urban legend. So it's in his best interest to keep killing people, because the more people talk and spread the story, the longer he survives.
Mm-hmm.
So really, kids, just stop believing in Candyman and he'll go away.
Now, you can watch this movie without having seen the first film. I don't personally recommend it, because I think there's a lot more pleasure to be had by putting the ties together and realizing, oh, all the very clever ways in which it connects to it. It will largely explain those things, but I think it's a lot more rewarding to be familiar with the first one. That being said, at the same time, the surprises are bigger if you haven't already seen the first one, because there's a lot of reveals in here that have already largely been revealed from the first film, but in the context of this storytelling, it makes them scary all over again if they're new to you. The one thing I'll say that really separates this from the first movie in terms of me thinking it's actually the better of the two films is Nita Costa just shoots the living shit out of this thing.
Jesus Christ, really, it looks amazing.
It's such a stylish film, and like the death scenes are beautiful. They are beautiful when we see a critic character die. It's almost like an installation piece in a way.
Yeah.
It's so creative.
Right, yeah. And not only that, but the way she stages these things, and also this has to do, I guess, with the advance of movie-making technology, Candyman's skill set has improved a bit. And normally I'm nervous when they do that in a movie. I'm like, that guy couldn't do that before. And I realized that, no, he could. They just couldn't show it. And this movie really gives a chance to see Candyman really play with mirror imagery. That's not a mistake. When Chris says you're going to see those opening credits in reverse, there's a reason for that. And they keep that thematically going throughout the movie.
Yeah. One of the stylish flourishes that I really liked about this was those paper doll shadow puppets.
So I was going to say,
oh my god, that was amazing.
So that is a reoccurring thing throughout this entire film that runs, in fact, like stay through the whole credits, because it tells more of the story just using the shadow puppets. But it comes up again and again anytime someone's discussing history or the urban legend involved with Candyman, they choose to use shadow puppets to represent it as someone narrates over it. And they're really cool and creative, and it is an effective sort of visual metaphor for what urban legends are. And,
shadow puppets, in the caves. It's like, oh, this is our lore, these legends. Yeah.
But also, as Nita Costa and others in the cast have said, that they also didn't want to make a movie that celebrated the abuse of black bodies. And Chris is right. You stay towards the end, you're going to see some more shadow puppets, except those puppets are depicting real life things. And if you've been paying attention to the news, you're going to know what some of those things are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they kind of equate those incidences with the events that created a Candyman. It's a great way to give the audience information, but also distance it without celebrating, you know, the abuse of black bodies and tormenting what really is their target audience. Why would you traumatize your own target audience? It's a really smart, canny decision.
Yeah. I thought it was a really brilliant way to illustrate a lot of the themes. When the movie does that, it does it so much better than talking about anything.
It's really smart the way that it plays with the symbolism.
And yeah, totally.
You know, on the downside, I think it's compacting an awful lot of story into this thing. Like I said, it's trying to fold in all of the shit, and there's a lot of plot in the first movie. A lot of shit happens.
Yeah.
They're trying to gradually fold all that in and add new information on top of that, and it can be a little confusing at times, even people who are familiar with the first film. As well, I thought Coleman Domingo's character is really cool, but they kind of throw him in the third act into a character arc that's a little cliche. I think it's taken from one of the mediocre Candyman sequel films. I was like, this doesn't really follow for me. Why this is
we were discussing that as well.
No, we all had that. We had the
but
same.
We had the exact same discussion, except I wasn't going to mention the actor who played the character.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not saying what happened. I'm just saying he does some things that felt like, well, why would he do that? Because the plot needed someone there to be doing that.
It felt like a forced.
Yeah,
It felt like a big scene or two were missing.
I kind of forgave it because it was like, I was still along for the ride. So it was not like so egregious or anything. It was like, okay, I get it. But to your point, Marco, it's like, there must be like a cut scene for time, but I could have sat for almost like another 30 minutes with this because it was so engrossing.
Yeah. And shame it's only an hour and a half long. It felt like,
God, it could have been 2 hours easy.
Yeah.
I felt like they pulled back a little bit from the gore that was in the first one and choose to do a lot of things that are, you're not really seeing the gore so much as the effects afterwards, but shocking in its own way, but it makes it feel even less like a Barker product than the original film did in some ways, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, this does do the one thing that I always go, I can't watch this, where someone pulls off a nail off their
I'm like, oh, every Rundle time, Fly
I
right there.
I can't look at that. Oh my God. Never,
drink
never
some of my root beer right now.
Always works. The physical transformation, there's things there that are really done well on a technical level, but you do go, dude, you need to go see somebody. This is really worse. You know,
you kept asking
people even
questions.
Aren't commenting on it. Like, dude, you look like shit.
Yeah, even early on, like very early in the film, after he gets the bee sting, his hand looks like he has leprosy.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, that's peculiar. I'm like, anyone would go to an emergency room that second.
It's two things. Either you're allergic to bees or something's really, really, really wrong. And like, why would you go immediately?
Yeah. Run screaming to the emergency room.
Yeah, it's like, Jesus Christ, I got stung by bees.
Oh,
like,
gee, Candyman disease. We get this a lot. Have you been bitten by a Candyman recently?
Oh, dude, you weren't hanging out at Capri.
You're supposed to maintain at least 6 feet distance from anyone wearing a Candyman
outfit. It passes down every generation. It's a thing. You know, you'll see. You'll see.
Wear a mask. You know, wear the hook. Wear the hook. You know, be safe.
Be safe, yeah.
Oh.
That's Chris's job.
That's the leprechaun pun right there.
Right? Anyway, let's go to final thoughts. How about Wright? Get us started.
I loved it, front to back. I mean, the one thing we're all talking about with the third act change in character, let's say, it's a little too much just like happening because you were following each of these characters, which I've loved all the characters. Like everyone, like it made sense. I was caring about them. Like even,
Tiona.
Yeah. Her brother and her brother's boyfriend. Yeah. Cause thing is, when people do die, it tends to be just only white people. It's like, man, I swear to God, I really love that boyfriend character. It's like, I hope he does not die.
I was like, not the, don't let make them go.
Except they disappear from the movie.
For the record, the brother, gay brother, Nathan Stewart Jarrett, I was like, where do I know him from? He was on the show Misfits. If you ever watched the British show Misfits.
Okay. What? So, okay. Yeah. Oh my God. All right. So just really emotionally involved with, like, with all the characters, really well thought out. I loved the lead actor. I already forgot his name as well. Dr. Manhattan, as I like to say.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
I loved him so much. But again, like what we're all talking about too, like just the technical feats that this movie does. Mm. Again, the filmmaking, the sound design is fantastic. They really paid attention to every single little detail in this movie. Because then I started thinking like, well, it's really playing with mirrors. I'm going to try to look for any kind of sort of reflection here and there. It's like, and then it became even more engaging, even more fun with a very distressing story at the same time about violence. It definitely felt similar to the new, you know, the 2018 Halloween, like more of a continuation of the story. And I think this one honestly did a lot better. Like it enriched the first movie, but like to your point, Chris, you don't have to really watch the first movie. But if you did, it's like, oh my God, there's so much more going on now and they're understanding all of this. I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 razor blades and candy.
Frank?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, and I think we all saw the trailers, or at least first heard about this and saw the marketing for it last year, and I've been anticipating it for a long time. I think we've touched on it, one of its biggest strengths, which is anybody can go ahead and get something from this film, whether they are familiar with the series or they're brand new to it. I really do think that the production design is really the star, the effects are really the star, the actors are great, and all these characters are really fleshed out. I do think that character turn in the third act, it just feels so forced.
Glad to know I wasn't the old one.
No,
I'm sitting here like,
no.
They're all going to be like, we love this movie 100%. I'll be like, but what about that one thing?
It feels so phony and came out of nowhere. We only see this character two other times before that happens. It's just a little much for me. I do think that the way it tells the story visually is very interesting. And I think that's where its themes really shine the brightest. You know, any movie can get on some kind of soapbox and preach its message out to everybody. But I think the way this film does it is a very, very smart and intelligent way. It doesn't talk down to the audience.
Yeah.
And I think that's really ultimately what really deepens this film more than just a horror-filled ride, which is really, really is at the same time. So I got to give this 9 out of 10 actresses that have not fucking aged since 1992. Oh my gosh. She's just like...
Great.
She still looks amazing, yeah.
Marco, the original Candyman has always been kind of special. It came out in 1982, right at the tail end of that 80s slasher horror boom.
In the Rodney King era, though, wasn't it?
And before, like, things started to go meta with things like Scream or Wes Craven's Final Nightmare or even... What was that movie about the found footage Blair Witch Project? It's in this middle spot where it was kind of in a league of its own. It was a special thing, and as Chris mentioned earlier, its reputation has only grown over the years. So anybody who says, I'm going to make a Candyman sequel, only I'm going to get it right and expand on the lore and build off of the original, that takes some doing. And they pulled it off. I mean, I kind of went in going, please be good.
Mm-hmm.
And it manages to both enrich the lore, expand on it, introduce new elements to it, and like the original, has a bit of a dreamy logic where you can kind of interpret it in different ways, but also has so many issues that you could just unpack it in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of angles to interpret this, and I think that's very true. We haven't even touched on all of the themes in this movie, whether it's gentrification or the fact that artists are also responsible for gentrification. Why is Candyman going after black people as well as white people? What are the responsibilities of artists and creators, and how do they manifest these horrible things? And is horror something that helps us get through painful trauma? You could go on and on and on with all the various themes in here. Yes, that third act... I have some big problems with it, and I could just feel my score sinking when it happened, but it's not enough to kill the movie for me. This movie is one that I need to watch again, because as I said, there's a lot to unpack here. I think people are going to be talking about this movie for a long time, just like they were talking about the original. This is a great success, and on a second viewing, my rating may go up, but for now, I'm going to have to give this 8.5 bottles of Old Style out of 10. I almost said Old Fashions, but that's a different thing.
Not bad either.
No, everyone in the gallery is drinking Old Style from Chicago beer, and I'm like, oh, okay.
I think we're largely all on the same page here. I like it when people make a horror movie, even part of an already established franchise that is aware that, you know what, smart people like horror movies too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is a horror film for smart people who like horror films. You know, it doesn't talk down to its audience ever. In fact, there's some discussions about art here that I don't even know what the fuck they were talking about.
It is very satirical, by the way.
We're saying there are third act problems, but the real problem in the third act is that one character turn, because the last 5 minutes of this were really intense.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, edge of your seat intense, and like the final real shot that you see of Candyman, like, sent chills up my spine. I was like, oh damn, that was amazing.
And they brought it back, and it's what the Matrix Reloaded couldn't do, when they say it's like, oh, there's multiple ones, but it's here, it's like, man, this feels perfect the way that they presented that.
Yeah. So I really, really dug this. I would hope that most people are going to dig this, with horror especially. It's just not everybody's cup of tea. Yes, this gets pretty brutal. If you're someone who's interested because of all the themes and the people involved in making it, but you're like, you don't like horror, this might be too much for you. It's heavy and gory and gets really, really, really dark and fucked up. But that's what a good horror movie should be.
Yeah.
Not everything's for everyone. You can read the plot description on Wikipedia and decide how you feel about it after that. I am going to give this 8 out of 10 Sammy Davis Jr. classic songs, which made me laugh because I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, babe.
He sang Candyman.
Yeah, I know.
And I was thinking, there's a scene in here where they show Candyman, they really focus on the fact that one of his eyes is bad.
Oh my God, that's right.
Was that an intentional nod to Sammy Davis Jr.?
Perhaps, yeah.
I didn't see him wearing a Star of David chain, so I'm pretty sure it wasn't Sammy Davis.
Wow. Candyman has so many, for lack of a better term, killer apps. More than any other, like, monster in movies. Like, he's got a huge variety of shit, because they killed him, like, 8 different ways. So he can, like, pull on all this crazy stuff. If they introduce in the next movie, like, yeah, and he's also got a Star David necklace he throws at you and he'll kill you with. Like, would you be surprised? You'd be like, oh,
sure,
of course he does.
Of course, yeah, okay.